HR has been trained to be afraid. And so because it's been trained to be afraid, it will be risk adverse. And it will also be over the top proactive about not putting myself, the employees, and the company in a place where something could happen.
Hello and welcome to Love as a Business Strategy, a podcast that brings humanity to the workplace. We're here to talk about business, but we want to tackle topics that most business leaders shy away from. We believe that humanity and love should be at the center of every successful business. I'm your host, Jeff Ma, and as always, I'm here to have those conversations and hear stories from real people about real business, about the real world. And my guest today is John Baldino. John, with 30 years of human resource experience, John has been John has a passion, I would say, of setting contributors and companies up for success, and he's been going strong at that for, like I said, 30 years. So I'm really excited. He's giving an eye roll right now because like 30 years it's a good thing, John. John is a keynote speaker for U.S. and international conferences where he shares content and thoughts on leadership, collaboration, innovation, employee success, organizational design and development, as well as inclusion and diversity. He's the winner of both the Greater Philadelphia HR Person and Consultant of the Year Award. He's also the co-host of the popular LinkedIn Live webcast, But First Coffee. John is currently the president of Humoriso, a global human resources consulting firm. And of course, as a father, he's the proud dad of three amazing young adults, is how you frame it, right? So welcome to the show, John. How are you today?
Doing well, Jeff. Thank you so much for having me. And yes, I have to frame it as young adults because I don't think they like it when I call them children anymore. They're not.
But they're always kids to us.
Yeah, that's how I feel. And I mean, my parents still refer to me as their kids. So, but I don't know. I don't know that my offspring feel the same way. So, you know.
John, thanks for joining today. And I really want to open with you, John Baldino, and really centered around a conversation about passion. I know in my intro, I'm talking about you have a passion of setting people up for success, but can you build on that or refine that for me? What is your passion and really, how did you come across it or how did you find it?
Yeah, it's a great question. And truthfully, one that I'm hardly ever asked. I think for me, I realized that I got great joy out of seeing others get it, whatever the it was at that moment, right? Whether that be, and for me, by the way, I should say contextually, I started my work in a training, development, and education, right? Which falls for many organizations sort of under the large umbrella of human resources. And so when I would watch people, even in the most basic areas of retail, for instance, with learning how to use the register or doing a return, restocking items, and have people kind of say, oh, I got it, you know, self-sufficient now, I can take this and run with it. I enjoyed that because I like treating people like adults, very much so. And so if I can help them to be adulting in their own careers, right, in their own jobs, whatever it was, that made me happy. And I stumbled upon it, honestly, because I was pretty insecure growing up and very unsure of myself. I don't know that anybody or everybody would know that. It's people who knew me really did know that. But otherwise, I just kind of put it, you know, my best foot forward. But I was spent so much time trying to figure out how to make myself okay when really I found out that in service to others really handled that for me, right? Made me feel okay and gave me a stability that I kept kind of running after. So that was a gift. It was a gift.
Amazing. 30 years though, Human resources. I want to tap into all of that. And I, one of my first questions that pops in my head is, with 30 years in this, in this kind of function,
yeah,
what stands out to you as in terms of what's changed, what's evolved? Human resources is, as you mentioned, a big function, but also it's a four-letter word for some. It's a life, it's like a life-giving, you know, substance for others. What is what is human resources today in your lens, and really curious how it's changed over 30 years?
I mean, it's changed a ton. I can tell you though, there is some consistency in some people still using the same four-letter word and using it at me at times. Not as much as I would say as it used to be. And I don't know if that's a respect for elders thing or because I've gotten better at it, but certainly when I started, and some who may listen will remember this, when I started, it was called personnel. And so the focus really was on people for sure, but it was really just about making sure people knew where to go, what time they had to be there. They had the resources that they needed in order to be successful. And usually that was very tactical, right? Whether uniforms or the training or whatever materials would help them get things done. I'd say what has changed significantly in that as it evolved into human resources is that we, in good HR, we're looking at the person not only from a compliance standpoint, you know, do they have what they need? Did we do everything that we're supposed to do? Are we keeping them from suing us? Into how do we help people to know that they are adding to what we're about here? Not fitting, but adding to what we have going on here. And how do we help people to sort of explore creativity and innovation and find a place to be included? Because that is a heavy lift. I know that people will say, well, everyone's included. We don't look at anybody differently. Well, that's not true. I know what you mean, but people are coming with different experiences. So that in and of itself changes, right, how people are walking in the door. And so we have to be a little more thoughtful about that. And I think in HR, again, if HR is being done well, we're really seeing people take that much more seriously. Not putting aside compliance or policy, I know, but if we want to do policy really well, build people up, make your workplace a place that they want to be by investing in those individuals, you're not going to have a lateness problem. You're not going to have people that are just trying to figure out what's the bare minimum of the dress code that I can wear without getting into trouble. I mean, that's not the kind of creativity we want to encourage employees to spend their time on. And that in many ways is how you can see the difference in the way in which some organizations still sort of function as personnel rather than human resources. Yeah.
What about in the last, 3 years since the pandemic, have you seen, trends change, expectations change? What in the world of HR, where's that moving?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, don't believe all the hype that everybody's working from home. That's one thing I need to make sure people realize. And I know that that gets a lot of press, that remote work, flexible work. I'm not disagreeing with it, and I'm certainly not saying it doesn't happen. And in the last 3 years, for certain, that has taken off like never before from a percentage standpoint. But, when I talk to companies that are like, we want, everybody should work from home. It's the only way to do it. And I talk to some very well-meaning HR people. We will say everybody needs to work from home. It's if you're not, you're really, not going to have the kind of talent that you want. And I will say, that's awesome. Love that you feel that way. Can I ask you a question? Sure. How many times have you done DoorDash in the last month? How about Instacart? How many times have you ordered food that you picked up on your way home from somewhere? Oh my gosh, John, I don't know. Plenty of times. Okay. Those people can't work from home. Those people are there. Your Zoom pizza isn't happening. Someone is really making it. So we have to be very, very thoughtful about roles and contribution that I would say we're still not where we need to be. It has changed the most in the last 3 years, but we're not where we need to be when it comes to that. I need people to be on the manufacturing line building stuff, because when I go to Home Depot and the stuff isn't on the shelves, I'm annoyed. Well, I can't be annoyed if I'm saying annoyed out of one side of my mouth, and on the other side I'm saying everyone should work remotely. It's the only way to do it. Well, apparently not. They can't build my stuff to put on the shelves because they're trying to do it from home. It doesn't work the same. And we're seeing some companies starting to make, you know, I'm sure you've seen it too, return to work policies now, right? At least hybrid, 2 days a week, 3 days a week, because we're starting to see we need that connection and we need people to be around sometimes to make that happen.
Yeah. Earlier, you kept mentioning, it stood out to me, you kept saying, if HR is being done well, then such and such and such. John, is HR being done well?
Why would you do this to me? Yes.
it's a big if.
It's a big if.
And I'm curious, like, from your perspective, is HR being done well? Of course, we're not generalizing everybody, but I'm saying as a trend of what you see, HR, I mean, just HR comes up a lot in my world, because when you're talking about culture, when you're talking about people that need to change behaviors, how we treat each other, toxic culture, I mean, HR almost always is either the force that helps make it happen or the force that keeps it from happening. Rarely not, you know, anything in between the two.
I mean, yeah, I don't want to generalize too much. I would say there are more good HR practitioners getting press. And so that the encouragement there is, hey, look to these folks for what good HR can look like. But I'll balance that by saying there are still plenty of HR people who are really interested in, this is my corner of the world. I'm going to be the policy police. I'm very content to just be, you don't like me? Fine, I don't care. You know, I put the handbook together. You have to do this, you have to do that. And the insecurity that's found in too many HR people has sort of robbed this discipline of, I'd say, the forward-looking component that it ought to have. So that is still real in some companies, and some who are listening probably are nodding their heads quickly up and down to say, yeah, I have one of those. You know, micromanaged, total power trip. We never see them. They sit in their cubicles or in their office if it's on site, or, you know, they're working from home. They never come in to see the employees that have to work on site. It's very separate. That has to be remedied, because it's not doing us any favors, quite frankly.
Well, even setting aside kind of the painted picture we just had of the type of person maybe doing HR, but even the role itself, like the function itself, often sits between these two worlds of, maybe there's some HR practitioners who really are well-meaning and wanting to grow people and help people feel better and more included and stuff. And then there's this, I won't say it's separate, but there's this function of the department that is first and foremost intended to protect the business, mm-hmm. and intended to put up the guardrails in terms of what, you know, would get them in trouble or would get the business into a bad situation, right? And those two ends are at odds quite a bit, regardless. Or at least that's the impression.
That's the impression, yes.
So maybe talk a little bit about that. Like, what is the reality of that?
I think the reality is that compliance and culture are not two different things. They're actually two sides of the same coin. I don't think you're going to have healthy compliance in your organization if your culture is unhealthy. And I also think a healthy culture needs compliance, because it needs to know the boundaries, its structure. And you know, to borrow a lesson from parenting, right? it isn't a great idea to raise children with no rules whatsoever, just because you want to be the fun parent, loved and all that good stuff. And it's not a great idea to raise your children with nothing but rules the whole time, because they can never find a way to express and emote in the way that they want to. I have to tell you, organizations are similar. We have people there that we are treating like children if we only are concerned about compliance. Follow my rules, do what I say to do, don't think for yourself, and everybody will be happy. Well, that's not true. The employee will not be happy, because we're robbing that person. And in a world where critical thinking is in a deficit, HR feeds into that potentially by only focusing on one side of that coin. We want to encourage culturally dynamic discussions, opportunities for innovation, giving people an opportunity to be expressive in support of organizational goals, taking risks where appropriate, not asking them to fit in, but to add in. That's a huge difference for some organizations. And those two sides of the same coin can work in tandem. I have to tell you, I hardly ever have to affirm policy. I hardly ever have to, because people are so bought into the organization and why we're doing what we're doing that they themselves will either self-police to make sure that they are part of the health of the organization. And they are more likely the ones to turn to their left or to their right and say, hey, you know, just so you know, when you do that, it causes this issue communicatively for us, which, yes, it's a violation of policy, but that policy is in place because we want to protect the communication. That's ultimately the goal. I love that. Let people take care of it themselves. They're adults. Let's treat them that way. Hmm.
I guess I'll share my, you know, the reason, and that's profound to hear that culture and policy or compliance are in the same coin. But I think for me, the reason why they become at odds, or at least what I've seen it and perceived, is that a lot of HR seems like it's operating from a very risk-averse fixed mindset, from this mindset of preventing problems before they start, and really only looking at the negatives, like really only looking at what bad things can happen. And even if they are, again, good meaning, like they want people to be happy, they genuinely want people to enjoy their work and their job, but it's almost like they don't have a growth mindset about that, about all the other ways that could be possible. And that, what you just described to me was like a very theory why kind of world where, you know, like people are kind of given that freedom. And I feel like HR kind of gets stuck in that theory X kind of space where, you know, compliance is king and all those things. Like, does that make sense? Or
it does. Secondly, I would say there's probably a couple of reasons for that. One, HR has been trained to be afraid. And so because it's been trained to be afraid, it will be risk averse. And it will also be over the top proactive about not putting myself, the employees, and the company in a place where something could happen. And I would say that's really been a product of our training. Secondly, if an HR division doesn't answer directly to the C-suite CEO and is a sub-function and reports to the CFO, which happens in a lot of organizations, finance is another risk-managed department. And so you have these two feeding each other. Which doesn't allow, and that's why the sales department hates HR and finance. It's why marketing is always the, you know, rotten department that finance and HR complain about, because you're asking those that are in creative and proactive and risk considerate roles to stop doing that. You stop doing that. That we need them to do that. I can't tell you how many senior HR leaders I've chatted with who are bad mouthing their CEO because the CEO is this visionary. Let's try this. Let's try that. And they are uncomfortable with it. But I want to also say that what I described a few minutes ago doesn't need to be theory. I exist in a community right now in an organization where that theory is real. It's actually happening. And so, and I know I'm not the only organization. There are other organizations as well. And so if we keep things like that as sort of idealized, what we hope one day to get to, and everybody's kind of thinking that, right? We need to start affirming the examples of ones that are really doing it so people know it's attainable, that it is something that has to happen. And change is not overnight. And you know, as an aside, I don't think a lot of HR practitioners have really been equipped to do change management very well. It's just not something that we spend a lot of time on, quite frankly, in HR. But we are asked to do a whole lot of change.
Yeah, I was like, that's surprising.
So surprising, for sure.
Well, I mean, you kind of just summed up my entire reason for being, because my whole thing is that this podcast exists because I want people to see what else is possible and see how things can be. So I appreciate that. Where do we start, I guess? Because you know, I keep clinging on to the if HR is being done well statement. And yeah, I want HR to be done well. The picture you painted is what I strive for, not just from an HR perspective, but from an organizational perspective, right? I want workplaces to be filled with that type of energy, that type of culture, that type of feeling that you walk through the doors and you are kind of just know that you belong. I think that HR is such a big part of that. It's such a big, you know, you like, again, they make or break it in so many ways. So where do we focus our energies first, or where do we begin?
I think you and I, in speaking before, when you and I were just having a conversation, I'm a huge proponent of this concept of love as an organizational strategy. It is the starting place. And I mean it in a genuine way. When you are an organization and you're trying to brand yourself as, we're like a family here, as an example, right? Mm-hmm. Come be a part of our family. Number one, that's not the best example for everyone who may hear it. Some people don't have wonderful, warm thoughts and feelings about family.
Yeah.
And so if you tell me your organization is like a family and my frame of reference is the awful family I have or had, then you're asking me to superimpose that on your organization. And guess what? I don't want to be a part of that. But if what you're trying to get across really is the net effect of whatever your perception of family is, there's warmth, there's healthy communication, there's a desire to build one another up, to see each other succeed, to look to see how we can provide in ways for people that perhaps haven't been provided for in the past. Those are the things that I would spend the time focused on and speaking about. And that's a great starting place. When you have your values in bronze on a plaque hanging in your lobby, and that's really the only place the values exist, that tells you a whole lot of where your starting point needs to be. When you have values that are things like integrity.
Yeah, my favorite.
I mean, I want to work for the organization that is where falsehood is the value. Like, we're just straight up lying and deception are what we're all about. Be thoughtful about, I'm not saying to take integrity down. Please don't listen to this and get, you know, a razor blade and try to scratch out whatever it says on your value plaque. What I'm saying is give it legs. Let people know what that looks like where you are. because some people will hear integrity and think transparency. And so when you're an organization that has reasons at times to not be transparent about things, does that mean you're not operating in integrity? No, it does not. But you may have allowed someone to think that because you provided no context for the values. So start in those areas. So contextually, the organization has real bones that can be pointed to about what we're about and what your contribution will mean as you're a part of it.
I love it. I think you framed it. You framed it exactly how I feel. And it's just so, I think it's so important. This is one of those things that I would shout at from the mountaintops, because it's just, I mean, you even picked integrity, which is my go-to value statement that I'm just like, what does that mean?
Trust. No, sorry. I want to work with the people that are, I just can never trust. Like, what do you want people to understand about trust? I worked in banking and finance for 8 years in my career, right? 8 of those years were spent in banking and finance. What does trust mean there versus what trust might mean in a different industry? There are specific things. I can't tell you out of privacy why I couldn't move forward with a particular lending option other than to the direct people it affects. If I have 7 other people in the company, they're like, oh, what happened to that Smith deal? Tell me why you didn't go. I can't. I have to keep confidentiality around some things, just like in a hospital or a clinic. I can't just walk around and say, oh my goodness, did you hear about the Jones case? He has gonorrhea and now everything's ruined. No, you don't say things like that, right? You can't do that. But does that now mean the organization is not trustworthy? Because you don't tell me things. You're not living in that. No, that's not what it means. Let me help you contextually know how we operate and how you can know you're traveling on a similar path.
Yeah. And I think so much of the space that I work in and that many people are traversing as they navigate the workplace environment and culture in general, as we try to get a grasp on this, it kind of crosses between this invisible line of kind of feelings and emotions and perceptions and less quantifiable, less measurable things. And then, of course, what everybody, or at least, leaders and, a lot of people want is like the data, which they associate with the results and the proof. Yes. And there's this kind of space where, they are at odds at times, just in the sense of not because they can't coexist, but because you're sitting here going, well, my surveys came back and people feel this way. And we have 89% satisfaction. Everyone loves it here. And I'm like, well, what about the 11%? And even amongst the 89%, what are they thinking? What are they feeling? What are they experiencing day to day? And, these things get kind of lost. Absolutely. In building a complete organization that really considers success. Like, I think it's almost like a definition of success problem, because when the masses just become a number, I think we lose sight of what real success might look like for teams.
And I think that, you make a great point. I think too, we have to be astute about the contributing factors that we're using to make the decisions we're trying to make organizationally. So when you have a survey, as a great example, and you do an annual engagement survey, it's a snapshot in time. You may have 89% approval rating right now, but that could change next month or in 2 months. It's why retail organizations don't do engagement surveys in October, November, and December, because everyone hates everything if you're in retail, right? But why do we? Because you're smart enough to know if I do it then, I'm going to have skewed results. Well, don't be surprised that it can be that way in any other month of the year. So be wise about, we would never make decisions based on one test. If someone, think about your own academic career, if you took a test and failed it, and that's the only test for 12 months that we're going to use to judge you and your contribution to the organization, my goodness, that seems so unfair. I just had a hard time with the periodic table and I couldn't remember everything and what it all stood for. But when I did the lab, I crushed it. I knew what every chemical was, but nobody's given me credit for that because they keep pointing to the one test that I bombed. Let's be thoughtful around surveys and what they're a piece of a larger picture of what helps us to make decisions about our approach in an organization.
I have so many other things I want to talk about. And I just looked at the clock and I'm like, what is going on? We've just scratched the surface of so many things. So this is going to go offline, or maybe another episode if you have time, because literally, I've enjoyed this conversation very much. I think so many more questions to go, but at the same time, already so much value achieved here. And, mm-hmm. and John, I really appreciate what you've shared and the perspective. I really appreciate you being here. Is there anything you'd like to leave people with when it comes to this topic? Because just to give you a chance to sum things up or close out.
I mean, I would just say by the way, I'd be happy to come back and chat with you some more. This has been fun for me as well. So thank you. I would say that don't underestimate, and I don't mean this in a cheesy way, don't underestimate the impact that love in an organization can have, because love is more than a feeling. And I know HR gets scared of that at times, right? Because we already are called the touchy-feely department. And so people try to back away from that. Honestly, love really matters. And it's something that people can grip and find stability in. And when an organization is wise about how it loves its employees and loves its divisions and it loves its resources, there's really great work that can come from that.
Well, that's going to get clipped and put on social media. So thank you, John, for that incredible soundbite. To the listeners, we appreciate you tuning in and we hope you're enjoying these episodes. If you haven't checked out Love as a Business Strategy, I'll say it every single episode. Go read it, please. Thank you. And subscribe, rate the podcast. I was just informed recently that we are a top 5% podcast globally. So that's I'll take it. I'll take it. So we hope you're enjoying that stuff. And it's all thanks to you all. So we will see every one of you and more next week. One more thank you to John for joining us today, and we'll see you all soon.